Ja! Ladies and gentlemen, welcome for the second edition of Giving Flowers. Today we got somebody iconic, legendary, my favorite skier of all time, skiing's archetype of style, the water to its roots, naturally gifted, style upon styles. We're going to have Mick D upon this, a.k.a. Snoop Kale Douche Dog, Gangsta Douche No, Rastafari Mikhail, Ski Angel, Shiz D, Mick Comp. This dude shaped the culture like no other, and we're so blessed to have him come on. So what's good, people? What's happening? What y'all doing on this lovely Wednesday? Dude should already have sent me an invite.
Boom, bomb.
There we go.
Happy Wednesday, buddy.
Happy Wednesday, my friend. How are you?
Don't forget, people. I'm awesome, yourself.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, right away. Boom, bomb.
Damn.
Connect.
Punk's reality. You know.
Yes.
Two-dimensional.
Dang. That's what we put it.
Oh, man.
Wow.
I didn't get a 40, Mick.
Yeah, well, too bad for you, bro.
It is. I'm drinking coffee. you have an apple juice?
No, it's beer.
Hell of a mug.
So what's up, Phil? Beer?
Yeah, chilling. Good to see you, Mick. Looking good,
yeah,
man.
You too, man. I was just thinking about it today, and I think last we saw was like 2 years ago at the Annecy thing, right?
Yep.
Because you didn't came last year, right?
No.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I was like, damn, I haven't seen you in like 2 years. And I haven't seen you in like way longer, Ivor.
It's been a long time. Give thanks for two-dimensional fucking shit. Voice
for calls. Real.
All that.
So what's up with you guys, though? You good, Phil?
Yeah, very good, man. We already got ladies up on the chat saying you're cute.
No,
I already know, people.
Shit. Oh, it's skiing, Mick. How's your back? My back's getting slowly but surely better, bro. Like, slowly. I started physiotherapy and starting to, like, being able to, like, lift weights and stuff and, like, doing, like, ice skating and, like, going biking and stuff like this. So, slowly but surely. I went skiing, like, 2 times. Kind of hurt afterwards, but physio said it wasn't too bad. So, we'll keep on going. Only allowed to do turns as far as this season, so gotta get in shape for next season, and then maybe we can start jumping.
Yes, sir. So
you
good here, man.
Has your health, Phil? You feeling better?
Yeah, feeling better. Femur is all back in the right place. I got
nice.
some new artillery up in there that's holding it in, but the bone is all healed up. Says the orthopedic surgeon.
That's good. So you got like screws and plates and shit like that?
Yep.
Oh, damn.
Yep.
Gonna have to keep him in, or are you gonna have to take him out at some point?
Yeah, I'm keeping it all in.
Well, at least you're gonna be way stronger that way. If you build the muscles around it properly, then that shit can never break again.
That's right. Hoping so.
So when can you ski again, though?
So good to have you on, man. This
Thank you.
An honor. And we going to kick it back. I know Iberg and you go way far further back than you and I go. And I was looking at your guys' first online interview, which goes back to 2000. And I wanted you guys to touch base on that.
Iberg. It's Iberg's fault. He just called me up one day like 10 years later that interview happened, and he's like, oh, go and check this link, and I just went and I was like, oh no, you didn't. And
man, it was on the DVD extras. I just digitized it, man. It was in the royalty DVD that no one got.
Yeah, man. Well,
I just figured it was a must, man.
That's a funny
like
one.
Dubski extra where you kill everyone at the Araj event. We need that online. Phil was
oh,
one of
word.
The people you killed.
Oh, shit. I forgot about that, too. Yeah, you should put that online. That was funny, too, man.
Did you know Phil was one of the people that you killed?
I did not know that.
Yep, it was awesome. Young little 14-year-old Phil. Just
I was honored.
Broken.
That was honored.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. I was like, yes, they picked me in their video. My favorite fucking skier of all time. I was like, yes, sir. Oh, man,
that shit funny.
Yeah.
So we go, like, say what?
Back to that interview you and Iberg done together. You said that your goal back then was to be styled like a snowboarder.
Yep.
I was wondering who inspired you or influenced your style as a snowboarder, or which snowboarder did influence your style?
At the very beginning, I guess like 90% of people won't even remember him probably because too young, but Trevor Andrew.
Hmm.
That was like, because he was the first one to rocking, like, you know, the old face mask thing, like the big headphones and like that, you know, the rags hanging down the pants and like sagging pants and stuff. He was the first one to do that, like back in 99 at Gravity Games, you know, and I was like, wow, this is what I want to look like, you know.
I said one of the people I thought that was an influence on you when we were just bullshitting was Nico Droz, because remember, like.
True, but that was before the whole hip hop thing. But yeah, because you gotta understand one thing, Phil. But you're right, Iberg. Thanks for mentioning that. You gotta understand one thing, Phil. Like back then, like I was the only skier allowed in the snow park in Lake Jose. Like no other like it was still at that time, like 97, 98. Where like I would like ditch school, like my mom wouldn't even know, and I like. Go skiing because in Switzerland, like back then, you used to get the ski pass with the school because, like, once a week you go to the gym, you know, like you have gym class, and in the wintertime, like they take you up in the hills. So then I was always ditching school to go skiing, and then I met up with all these snowboarder guys, and they're like still beefing and like having wars with skiers down in the snowpark, you know what I mean? So it's like skiers were still not allowed in snow parks back then. And I was the only one. And Dimitri, like, was always coming because, you know, Porte du Soleil is like you can connect from Avoria's. That's where Dimitri was. Because Dimitri, shout out to him. He's like the dude who taught me how to, like, 360, backflip, and all that.
Dimitri, right? Or Demonium?
Why yeah, well... I don't know what's their deal with Demonium now. I think Dimitri's not part of Demonium now, but he who started with this guy named Dre.
Okay.
But, like, yeah, you're right. Like, back then, it was all, like, the Advita guys, like Nico Droz and, like, all these snowboarders, like Thierry Chalet and, like, all these guys who were actually shaping the snow park in Lake Jose. And this was, like, 97, 98, something like that. And I was always only being with snowboarders, so it was the very actual first influence was only being with the snowboarders. And then through my style and skiing was more like guys like Trevor Andrew, who I was kind of copying in a way, but it's two different sports, so it was more about like dressing the same way as a skier type stuff, you know? So it was more like that, but that was that. And then, of course, you know, a couple of years after that, it was always... the old Tech Nine crew with Tomei, Zach, the Provo brothers, and like all these dudes were always only hanging out with snowboarders. So it was always like, wow, these guys look way doper than we do. So, you know, even like just a simple 360, you know how that works, Phil. Like you can watch a simple 360, and the only person that can do it like a snowboarder as far as 2022 is you and Henrik and Isaac and like some of the kids, I don't remember the names, but it's like otherwise people can turn a 360 to a shitty looking thing in skiing, but snowboarders always make it look good, even if it got no grab and even if it's small, like it's got a little twist to it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so Mark I think Frank was the illest at that, the no grab, just dope shit.
Yeah, great, no doubt. Lagoon was pretty dope with that too though.
Yeah, true. So you were what age at this time when you were getting into it? So I want to start, if anyone's joining us, this show is all about giving flowers. The reason why we wanted you on this week, Mikael, and we had Julia on last week, is to make sure that you know that we're grateful, the sport's grateful, and like you played a huge part in everything it is with Twin Tip Skiing from the beginning. And so it needs to be known for no one that knows that, that's tuning on Phil's level or yours or Inspired's, and also just for the history. Because if people don't know where we came from, like, it kind of sucks. And you played such a big role in certain characters, like even the current day, like Henrik and younger kids. Shit, you haven't even skied for over a decade, and your influence is still there every day. So we just want to say big up. Give thanks for the time, man, and you're the shit.
So well, thanks to you guys for bringing me in and always, like, as you said, like, since I was out for so long, always keeping me into the loop, like, because that's what you guys do, because... Like, I wouldn't, like, you know, if it wasn't for you guys, like, I'd have totally, like, just disappear and ghost out, you know? But, like, you guys, like, gave me the envy to just because we were friends before anything, you know, before the sport, before all that. Like, we shared stuff in our lives, in our previous, current, and probably in the future. We're still going to share a lot of things that nobody can share if we didn't go through what we've been through, like, throughout all these years, so... Thank you guys for keeping me into the loop for so long. And like, it's crazy, man. Like I still hear stuff like once in a while, like every month or so, like some people just text me and they're like, yo, bro, blah, blah, blah. And like, you know, send me like old videos and stuff. And I'm like, wow, this was like 20 years ago and you guys are still on that. So I don't really realize how much of an impact I had, but I guess
it's crazy. Yeah, no, bro. You did, man. So like, yeah, thanks. You're still here with us in this world. Life is short, so just needs to be said before anything, any of us are all gone. So
yeah, for sure. But thanks, guys, for bringing me in, and shout out to Julian for last week, and haven't seen this guy in forever, bro. But yeah, man, thanks for taking this thing back to the digital world and whatnot, and keeping it alive for like all these guys that did matter, because some of these kids, like, You wanna know a funny thing? I told you that, Iberg, but bro, Phil, like, my mom called me after the Olympic big air, and she was like, oh man, this is horrible. Like, I mean, these kids are really good in the air, but they don't even know how to ski anymore, do they? My own mom told me that, you know, and I was laughing so hard, bro. I was like, hey man, I ain't talking shit. Like, everybody does whatever they do and they're going crazy these days, but it's funny because some of these kids are so focused in like tricks and tricks and tricks that they don't even know how to ski properly anymore. And that's what I feel that's kind of sad these days with the skiing when I watch some of these videos, you know. Like, it's great. They're in better shape than we ever been, than we probably ever will be. But, like, I'm pretty sure you take some of these crazy kids as gymnastic kids and you take them, like, down the mountains when it's, like, super sketchy and, like, hard snow and it's, like, shitty-ass conditions. You could tell they're not going to be as going as fast as we are and having that much control over their skiing, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's the only thing I feel is kind of sad these days, but it's all right, man. The sport itself has got to evolve, though, in a way, whether we like it or not, you know what I mean?
Everyone knows best. And to go back to a question relative to your mother, like, you were a proponent for cannabis, and so is Iberg, like, earlier than anybody in skiing. Some of your first clips in your royalty segments was you, mm-hmm. in your royalty segment was you smoking weed.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, how did your mother react to that? Did she have anything to say about that, or did she never watch this?
Oh, dude, she hated it, and she had nothing to say, man, because, like, it was a time in my life where, like, I didn't even talk to my mom for, like, a good decade, because, like, she was totally against it, and, like, she hated it. She just hated it, period. And, like, she was thinking, like, yo, he's fucking his entire life up. But, you know, that was also, like, a time where, like, skiing wasn't the thing that parents wanted you to do as a job, you know?
No, it wasn't even a job. When, like,
yeah.
Let's rewind a little bit quick to bring you to even that point, because it's like 97, 98 when you're going to snow park. You get brought on a trip and have sponsors by 98, 99, right? Yep. So now you're 15 years old, 16 years old. I'm curious in life, as a fan, how all of a sudden does... Where do you go from just being in a train park in 97 to having Oakley, Rip Curl, and Dina Star be like, hey, here's our stuff for a sport that doesn't exist? Like, how does that come up? How did you even start your career?
Well, that's a funny thing, because since, like, you know, my mother, she's right here. she's laughing. She's like, yeah, whatever, go on, guys. it's funny because I was so bad at school, and like I kept getting kicked out of school everywhere I was going to, because I wasn't even really like a problem child. I was just bored. You know, you know me, Iberg. I don't know if it's ADHD, ADS, whatever that is. Never
put a name to it. You want to explore, man.
Yeah, I was just bored sitting in class, you know. So that's why I started ditching school and like going to the snow park, and like, you know, at some point, I'm gonna come right back to it. But at some point, when all these sponsors, they offered like a position for me to be in with like people with like team managers and travel and actually make a little bit of money out of that, she was like, you know what? Take the fucking kid. I can't handle him anymore. Like,
and this is kind of Cedric Mazier being a big brother the most, would you say, at this time? Or Sven, I know, is a big part too. Sven.
Yep. Yeah, Sven Mermo.
Yeah. So big up, yes. Cedric and Sven.
Sven was, but Cedric brought the old thing in. Sven was more like a skier friend, big brother / getting into weed smoking type guy, you know?
Yeah.
Which was exactly what I needed at that time to have, because, you know, I'm an only child and I never had really like structure like family was, because it's only always my mom and me. But, you know, to rewind back to your question, right before she was okay with that, so I was alpine skiing, because I only started skiing when I was like 9. Okay. That's when I first started skiing. And that's because my mom took us to the mountains from the city, you know. And then, like, at 10, like, I was having such, like, easiness skiing. Like, they offered her, like, a spot. They're like, yo, does he want to come to the Alpine, like, Alpine Racing Club, skiing club? And she was like, yeah, I don't have the money for that. And they were like, no, it's, like, in the school type thing. So we'll just take care of him. So every weekend I'll go there. And, like, after 1 year, I was, like, winning all the tiny regional and, like, local contests and stuff. So that's alpine racing, you know?
Yeah.
And then around like 12, I was like, it's too much structure. It's too much, like, again, it was like school, you know? So then I started to fuck around in school. Then, like, you know, I was like, ah. And then I started freestyling and stuff like this. So I tried to even do a mogul for a season, but it was, again, like too much of structure and training and this and that. I just want to go ski, you know? So then I did that. And I guess I was like 14, something like, I think this was like 97, and the World Cup of mogul skiing was happening in Le Creuset, where I always used to, Champéry, you know, where I used to always go skiing at the snow park, and that was right before the Canadian Air Force blew up, because all these guys, Julian, Vinny, JF, JP, RIP, like, all these guys, they were doing mogul skiing, and they were over there for that World Cup. And then Candide and Baptiste Colompaton, David Brun from the time.
Thank
and
you.
Yeah. And all these guys came to just do a freestyle show included into the World Cup of mogul skiing, blah, blah, blah. But you got to understand, this was my area. Like, every corner of that mountain, I knew it by heart. So they built up like this one bigger, like it was like a road gap over like a road, but it's not a road. It's like, you know, one of those skiing alleys inside of the mountains like we have in Europe, you know. And they built this road gap over it. And then they were like, oh, no, you can't jump that, little kid, like whatever, you know. And we built that road gap like way before. We've been there, done that. So I just like kind of snuck in and just went there and did that. And just tried it with a 360. And it wasn't massive like what you see nowadays, but it was like a good down drop, you know, like a good 10 footer down, like a 10 meter down.
Was it over a road or a cat track?
Yeah, more like a cat track thing.
Okay.
It's like, so you came out of the, like the chairlift, and then you took a left to go to some other place. So it was like people were just skiing slowly, you know, like flat, and then like we're just jumping over it. And so I did that. And then at the time, it wasn't Cedric who was a team manager for Dinastar. It was Rafael Mono, who was a legend girl from female mogul skier. I think she even has Olympic medal. Mon, tu te rappelles si Renaud, elle avait fait une médaille olympique ou pas?
Olympique.
Non, elle était tout le temps dans les podiums mondiaux
Albertville, okay. 92, she got second or third behind Donna Weinbrecht, is my prediction.
There you go, something like that. And she was the team manager at that time for Dinastar. So when she saw that, she was like, oh my God, okay, look at this little 13, 14-year-old kid just not giving a fuck and like sneaking in. We told him not to and just trying our jump for our show for the mogul contest, like trying it with a 360. Like, who is this kid, you know?
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, she's like, oh, I was like, oh, I got to, because then I skied the whole day with these guys and they were like, oh, that's great, blah, blah, blah. Because I already had Dinastar because I had a deal for the Alpine Racing. But back then, like, these guys had... I think they did, like, Dinastar didn't even have like twin tips. No, Salomon was coming with the
ripstick, is what it was called.
The what?
Ripstick. The short
something. Little, like, but we're skiing with like alpine skis, bro. And that was crazy. So that happened the whole day I skied with them. And then at the end of the day, I was like, yo, I got to get my connection to go back home and take that chairlift before it closes to ski back home on the other side of the mountain. And she was like, no, 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 you coming with me. And I was like, what do you mean? And she was like, I'll drive you home. And I was like, yeah, you got to go all around, like the other way around the mountain. It's like an hour drive and blah, blah, blah. She was like, no problems. And then somehow she ended up driving me to my mom's house. And she explained to her, like, I think we got something for this kid. And my mom was like, what are you talking about? Like, is that, that's not even a job. Like, what is he saying? And then my mom was like, okay, whatever. And then one day sent in a contract of like actual what, you know, how much money, how much material, the budgets, which travels and this and that. My mom was like, oh, this is getting real. So my mom was cool enough to give me 1 year. She was like, okay.
Was Dinastar your first sponsor?
Yep.
Okay. And then how quick did the other ones come right after this?
Very quick, because in Europe, Rip Curl, Oakley, and Dinastar was the same old company. Like, they're all the same.
Distributed.
They were, yeah, whatever. Yeah. Like, you know, like you would say, like, I don't know, like a couple of brands are, yep, you know, manufactured and like monitored by one, yep, brand. Yep. That's what it was then. So my mom was cool enough to give me 1 year. She was like, if in 1 year you can prove me that this can be a job, okay, then I'll let you go. And then you do that job and it's cool.
And you're like 15. Then,
yeah, I was like 15, and at the end of that season, that's when the Yo's Games in Solden happened, and I ended up being second behind Julian.
Wicked.
And that was it. But yo, Phil, you know what trick would be on a podium at that time? Like Rodeo 540, bro.
That's what's up.
Yeah, well, I know, but you know what I mean? That's crazy.
Did you get second with the Rodeo 5?
Yeah, exactly. And I can't
remember. But what did Julian do?
I think Julian did like a cork 7 or something like this. So it was something like that. And then, so I got, I had my first contract ready. Like, I was skiing all winter. And then I come home with a check. It was like, I can't remember. J'avais ramené combien de soldes?
7,800.
Euros, c'était en euros là-bas, je crois.
Non, c'était,
ah oui, c'était pas encore en euros.
Non, c'est l'équivalent de 8,
9 000 francs. Ouais, tu sais, like, if you bring back like close to 1,000, like 10,000 bucks in 98, bro.
Yeah, to a sport. That was like,
oh, bro, they didn't even have a ski, bro, for
the
sport. I'm flexing.
That was like the first contest ever.
Yeah, some of that too. But it was Eurosport and everything, so it was the first like actual real contest, you know, like
youth,
it was like
only
real thing.
Winter games.
Yeah, exactly.
I went the next year.
And see, my mom just reminded me that then I was getting money from the sponsor because I was winning that. So it's, you know how that goes, Phil. Yeah,
podium.
Like if you make a like an actual contest, like a major contest podium, then your sponsor says they give you the same amount or some stuff like this. So imagine at that time, bro, like I get home with that kind of money and a contract in my hand. My mom was like, okay, well, I guess this is your job, you know? So that's pretty much how it all started. And then I came to Mammoth, and then it was you, Iberg, and then on and on and on and
you
on.
Went
and then
to New you Zealand came into the first, though, trip. Right? Like, you went right away. Didn't someone said, because before I met you, you had that New Zealand trip. Because you got, like, ads
right
there. So, like,
that's
you
right
win an event in the spring. You get,
that's right,
you get Dinostar Oakley Rip Curl that spring. You make money, and then you go to the other side of the world at 15 for a sport
that's
that
right
doesn't even exist.
I forgot
yet
about that.
One
that's right.
Come on.
Yeah.
Pick up yourself. 15-year-old.
And they had the, because actually, you know what? My first ever X Games wasn't even in the U.S. It was in Australia.
Yeah, I forgot about Australia. Next day, Marc-Andre Bellavo, I think, won.
Something like this, bro. And the half pipe, bro, like the half pipe was like probably like 3 meters high, bro. That was like one of those micro mini pipes, you know. And that was X Games back then, you know. And Marc-Andre won the big air, I think, and that's when I won the half pipe. And then that's when, like, you know, everything started to go like everywhere, you know, starting not going home, just, you know how that goes. You know how that goes too. And just, like, you know, going tripping everywhere and, like, just traveling and doing this and doing that. And then you never stopped for, like, a good 10 years.
So did you ever have a goal of being a professional skier? Or were you just having fun one day and then someone just is like, here's a bunch of money. And then you went and made money. And then you were like, what the fuck? I'm a pro? Like, it's
pretty much
crazy.
And that's why I kind of lost it at some point. Because let's be honest, you know. Like, because I never had the drive to be a professional, because I just never wanted to. It just happened.
Yeah.
And it just happened.
And Mom's then, ultimatum of the 1 year made the pressure, made you excellent, huh? Made you perform that year.
Not even, because, like, I guess it's horrible and howdy and arrogant to say that, but I just never had to train, bro, compared to the others. Like, I just look, like, you have that too feel sometimes. Like, you just look at something and you're like, I want to try that trick. And you just visualize it so many times that you actually just land it first try. And you just go on and then take it to bigger features. And that's it.
That's what was so appealing with your style, especially, is that it was natural, nonchalant, and yet skillful. So it never seemed like you try. A lot of people try to be steezy, carry their body a certain way and force certain movements, but your shit was always fully fluid and natural. And it brings me to another, like, aspect of you, which was, like, your top tier fashion choices, like, yep, probably influenced by hip hop, I assume. But when did that kick in into your life? Like, the fashion orientated drive that you had that made you carry yourself in such a demeanor on Hill?
Super early, bro, because, like many kids, I went through different phases, you know, like, you
yeah,
know,
let's start at the beginning question, because I never asked you when.
Yeah,
because I met you and you were a Rasta kid, right? So yeah, all of a sudden I meet this 15-year-old Swiss kid with dreads that smokes. So you already had a persona, a character, lifestyle you're searching out. Like, when did you become a Rasta youth, and were you like, was it a search and then you found something that you liked or identified, or did you have any extremes before Rasta? Because you went straight into kind of gangster style and then straight into like goth or whatever, but like, what was the beginning origins of your Rasta, and was there stuff before it?
But it's so funny, bro, that you asked, because you're not the first one to ever ask. But that's funny coming from you, though, because we actually had millions of conversations but never brought that up. But it's funny, bro, because, like, since I'm a kid, like, I always been going, like, from one angle to the other. And I think I still do somehow, but now I'm just older, so I just have one thing that suits and like, I like better. But just so you get the idea, like, the first CDs I bought with my pocket money that I, like, had put on the side, because my mom would always give me $2 per week to, like, you know, buy whatever candies and stuff and whatnot. And I actually, like, put all these on the side when I was, like, 9 or 10 years old. And the first time I was able to ditch out of school. I went hitchhiking, and I went down to the first city down in the mountain, and I bought like two CDs. And for people who are old enough, there was one CD that was Fear Factory. It's called Obsolete, and that's like a neo metal kind of thing. And then the other CD that I bought the same day with my own first money, my first two CDs, that was NTM. Yeah, exactly. Fear Factory, Obsolete. That was my first ever album. And the second album was NTM, Paris Sous les Bombes. That's a French rap group. And before that, I wasn't even able to have my own music. So I would listen to music that other people would give me. Exactly. And there was a lot of Deftones. There was a lot of punk music. There was also like a lot of skate music and stuff like this, like Pennywise and NOFX and like stuff like this. And then I was always fabulating into like my very own hero has always been Seth Morrison.
Wicked. I knew that. Big up Seth, man.
Yeah.
But that's before I even started to be like an actual skier. That was like 11, 12 years old. Because before I saw the first Canadian Air Force videos, I was only looking to cassette tapes to Seth Morrison. Because he had like something different than everyone else.
He was the only character at the time. He was the only one that colored his hair. Like you had Glenn Blake and then Seth.
Yeah, and he was making like his nails black, and like he was drinking beers, and like he was throwing shit out the window. Like I was like, I want to be like him, man. You know, like total fucking out of the old thing, you know.
Yeah.
And so on, it just went like this, and the old Rasta phase was more like, because I was hanging a lot with Cedric, I was hanging a lot with Candide. Then, you know, like Sven Melmo and like all these guys, Thierry Chalet and all these guys, and all these guys were only listening to reggae and dancehall. And since I'm the type of person that I love to learn about anything and everything, like they showed me something I didn't know. So I was like, oh, I like this. So then, you know, I went more into this. And then once I went back to hip hop, was not because I discovered hip hop, it's because I went back to it. Because before that, I was all about NTM, Le Rat Luciano, La FF, Funky Family, Troisième Oeil, so type things. And I was already in hip-hop before I like kind of got into this old fashion style of hip-hop. It's just then it had that one thing fashion didn't have before in hip-hop. Because it was just dudes that were dressing like dudes in the streets, you know. But yeah. then there was Mobb Deep, then there was 21st side of 12th Street, like then there was like Jada Kiss, then there was like Capone Noriega, then there was these dudes, and they started to show in like a new way of dressing, you know. And I was like, ooh, this is different. I like that. I think I'm gonna go back to hip hop and with it the fashion style. So I guess that's why.
Yeah, it was fun times.
Love it, man.
Yeah, Sven even got me set on the reggae stuff. Like when I stayed with him when I came out to film with you, all we listened to was Sizzla and Anthony B on repeat. That one album. Like I don't know what it was.
Yeah,
man, maybe 200 times. Everyone's gone, but me.
But that's the funny thing though, because we never really listened to like old school reggae, like you know the super like type reggae, like you know it was always like super hardcore artists.
Internet anymore.
Even if they do reggae and type stuff like this, it was always like dancehall type-ish reggae. So we never actually listened to Bob Marley or stuff like this. You know what I mean?
Mm. And as far as like your songs and your segments, did you have any say in any of those, or were they just like the producer, which was Iberg, or director, like really felt your style and said, that's Mick, Sizzla, Word of Truth, Jizza, Liquid Swords, Rakim, No to Ledge, on and on?
To tell you the truth, the only time I had a say in any of the music is I always wanted specific songs because I was really like picky with the songs I wanted for my segments. And the only person that actually allowed me to pick songs was kind of more like Iberg. But then at some extent, because then Iberg was like, yeah, we can't use this. Like, you got to use this. Trust me. And I always trusted him because, you know. But then in the any other type of segments, I had never no say.
Word. Well, they were all great choices to fit your style and whatnot. I mean, obviously, more iconic is like Words of Truth and GZA Liquid Swords and Rakim Know the Ledge, but those all are monumental.
Let me tell you, the Beanie Man song with that.
Oh, shit. Yeah, of course.
I get a request once a year. Oh. Like, yo, what rhythm is that? Because it's a DJ mix. And then I haven't even known the rhythm name. And I just heard yesterday a producer down in Jamaica is like, this is what started it for me. And it's the same beat as your song. I was like, what? Still don't know the rhythm name.
Big which song of Beanie Man is it?
The one that you and Crichton share a segment. And
oh, the Badman song.
Yeah, Badman, and I don't give a damn.
Yeah, I think the rhythm is... Yeah, because the initial rhythm is from Buju Benton, because it's not a rhythm.
No.
Yeah, the original song is a Buju Benton song.
Okay.
It's not a rhythm.
Beat a rhythm.
We had to burn it off the copy of Stereotype to get the song, because obviously we all wanted to bump that song while we were skiing to feel like Mikhail. And my friend Fred G, who's Mikhail is familiar with, burned all the segments of Mikhail. I think he's the original route to digitize Mikhail's skiing from DVDs and VHSs to internet. Fred G, look it all up, dude. All this, and we got like, and afterwards, Iberg, obviously, you put it all on, but we got all the Mikhail shit up on the internet. This from Blunt.
Yeah, that was one of our favorite segments.
Blunt was a great movie. Big up Dave Levin.
Yeah, word up.
Stein, a.k.a. Columbine.
Yeah, that's man. Changing the game.
Thanks, bro. You changing the game as well, dog. Come on. Don't bullshit me, man.
No, I ain't bullshitting you, man, but this is about you. And yeah, man. Such an influence. I mean, it's ingrained like in so many of us, your style, and it lives on, and it's going to live on forever. Since, like, obviously, one of the GOAT or the GOAT, presumably Henrik Arlo, like, said it himself, like, he learned most of the stuff from you. And Heiberg and I were discussing this yesterday. You obviously gave Idolo. Henrik Arlo, his nickname. Did you also give the nickname Bloody Dollars to Henrik?
No. Idolo was just because, you know, Iberg was, because you got to understand, Iberg taught me most of my English. Like, that's a fact.
It's the like, remix.
It was 50% from rap music, 12% from being with people that are actually English speaking people. And the rest is all Iberg teaching me shit.
If you guys never read, this is Mikhail's first English book he ever read.
Yeah.
Here's some words maybe he learned in sentences.
Do you know what, Iberg? I just reordered it like 2 months ago, bro.
Oh, man.
To just have it on my shelf.
You need it was to, hard you know, to find. Bring it up 2022 and you can go to the Bods Cartel book, man.
I should read that too. There's gonna be some good reads.
There is some good ones, man. What you answered the question about language because I was always interested. Because Henrik, like he always talks about learning about his English off Wu Tang, and so like it was fun. Like you answered the question, but that's a wicked way of learning. Like, but that's skiing, man. Like, how sick is that? Because of skiing and the places it brought you, you got to learn the English you did. And I'm telling Phil. What I want to make sure you get credit for too, it's like not only did I get to watch you learn English, but then you became a songwriter in the words of English. You know what I mean? So like, to me, that's probably as dope as being a dope skier, because to have that skill set of another written language with interpretation, big up yourself, Nick.
Thanks, fucking bro. Wicked. Well, thanks to you, though, so, in part.
That brings it into this, though. Like, so you got into music. When did you even start to, like, you'd always write, right? Like, we had, like, shots of you in 1242, like, writing with a pen and a pad. But, like, when was it really, like, I want to be an artist? Because all of a sudden you became an artist. And I don't remember if it was a rapper first or if it was a death metal guy first or what the fuck was it. But, like, what was it where you're a skier? Like, for sure you just won, like, 2 U.S. Opens. And where you're just like, man, I'm kind of bored with this. Like, let me get into music making? Or, like, how did that start and what did you do first?
I don't even know, bro. It's like, well, writing has always been something in my life. Because being a only child, being lonely when I was a kid, just always hanging out with my dog and not having any friends because living in the middle of nowhere. It's like, my mom is a writer herself. Like, she wrote, like, a couple of books. So, you know, it was always like, and that's probably how I learned so quickly and like with easy another language again, because now I'm totally fluent in German and Swiss German, like we were talking, and that's only been hanging out with like other people that speaks that language and they teach me, but then I listen, you know, I seem like a person which I don't pay attention and I'm always all over the place. But actually, if you tell me something, like, it gets in and it doesn't come out. And then, like, I always try to mimic. I was doing that in skiing. I'm doing that with new languages. And I guess I did that with my mom. Because, like, she was always writing, would play Scrabble words. And then, like, words and, like, letters has always been something that I really love, you know. Compared to, like, kids who, like, I've never had a, like, Sega Mega Drive or PlayStation or shit like that. That was never my deal. Remember, when we lived together, some of you guys would always be in front of TV. I wouldn't. I would always be doing something else, you know? So, I don't know, man.
True. Taking a bath with a Tweety Bird and fucking, like, rolling spliffs and having a glass of wine. Yeah, you had the weirdest shit when you come out. It was awesome. But you're definitely right. I never really thought about the quiet time that you would always have.
Yeah, I don't know. Just always been weird, even since I'm a kid. But yeah, to answer your question, I don't know when I became an artist. I think it was always in me. And again, some dude, and that was before metal, came to me when I came back from the U.S. and was kind of bored with the whole skiing thing. And he offered me the possibility to go record because he was hearing me freestyle at the skate park all the time. And then he was like, yo, I got a studio. And this was like 2003, so... No, 2006. Sorry, my bad. That's when I came back from the second.
Are we talking the cost?
Yeah, the cost.
Yeah, you know the boss.
So there was the Bad Kid Is Cooking Volume 1 and then Volume 2. And that was the very beginning of like the artistic stuff. But when I hear it again, man, it's so bad. Oh my God. But then, you know, then there was that. And then like, I went back into metal because of Fear Factory, because I was always into metal when I was a young kid. And then somebody brought me the opportunity to go and build a band with these guys. So I was like, hey, why not? Something new, something more interesting, something to feed my brain, you know? So I went and did this, which the band went great for like 4 or 5 years. And then we just decided to split up. We're still all in great terms. I still make music with Ataxia, a lot of it. In the hip hop, but then, you know, I was like, hey, and that's why my first official album is The Comeback, because it's coming back from the hip hop I was doing before the metal. And then boom.
Okay.
And then I decided to change the whole name and the whole thing, and like Mick Comte, which is my actual real name, because my mom's last name is Comte. I decided to change the name from my father to my mother's, because father was never around. So that was that. And then I decided to change the rapper's name and just keep my name. And then I came with The Comeback. And then since then, there was 3 albums and close to like 200 singles and like 15 different projects and like 35 different videos. There you go.
Yeah, you keep going, man. That's pretty wicked. Yeah. Pretty fun to see the development, creation, and just like, it's like getting to watch someone draw and become better, you know? Like, I get to watch my kid make better pictures every year they get older. You make better music. It's fun to watch from afar.
Thanks, bro. I like that. I like the how you picture it. Like, kids getting better at drawing. I think I'm getting better at it. So now it's the first time that in the last year and a half, I've been able to listen to my music and be like, ooh, this is actually pretty dope. Like, I don't see where I could make it better in that particular song. So that's why I'm not gonna do it anymore. I can find something else. You know me.
There's some animals.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can attest to that, dude. Listening to your shit, it's gotten better and better over the years. Like, and you it was dope also when you made songs for Skin. You could tell you were taking a different branch. That was Night Ward era, but kick back on the subject a little bit. Iberg mentioned this yesterday, which we don't want to overlook because it's interesting. So you went on the Crunk Juice tour. Yeah. Can you tell us more about that?
Happy you wrote that down.
I hope Liesl's not watching this live because she'd be pissed, bro.
Hope she is. Big up, little Weezy Anna.
Yeah, I went on the Crunk Juice tour. Go on. I did.
With yeah, Lil Jon. How did that go on?
Well, not too good. But on that tour was Lil Jon, Trillville, Lil Scrappy, some of the DJ, I can't remember the name. But it's just we got mad drunk with tequila on the bus, and then I got punked by Lil Jon, so I told him to fuck off pretty much. And long story short,
I thought you got in a fight with Lil Scrappy, mate.
No, Lil Scrappy was actually the only dude that was mad cool with me. And Lil Jon.
I want to explain something. Why, if it's all foreign, what everyone's listening to right now. So, and like, this was 2005 and 6. Crunk Juice was an energy drink, like Red Bull, and Monster wasn't big yet, and neither was Rockstar. So, and then Lil Jon was humongous. And so the fact that Mikael got invited to even go on this tour bus to help promote Crunk Juice as the athlete was pretty that fucking was crazy. Wicked. So it was that pretty was... like the fact that you got the link and then like you went and made it happen. But how it was one day you lasted or two?
Just like 24 hours, something like that. And it was supposed to last like a full week.
So you weren't sponsored by Crunk Juice after that?
Nope.
Oh. Well, fuck. I just remember they got a drink out of gasoline fucking containers. That was a lot cooler than cans.
Yep. That was the good times, man.
Let's
Exactly.
Yeah, they even got the gasoline container. I want to talk Ninth Ward because everyone that reached out to me that when I said I was doing it, they're like, man, you got to talk about Ninth Ward. So let's talk Ninth Ward. So it's you're blowing up. You just won two U.S. Opens. This is like 2004 or 5. Are you think like, did you want to start a ski company then? Or how did Ninth Ward start for you? Because so those who don't know, Mikael's, he's going to tell us in a second what he is to Ninth Ward, but he was the face of it. If you thought Ninth Ward, you thought Mikael. So Mikael got like put all that on the map and then created that whole club style and genre with not only himself but a team. So it's pretty I would love to hear your version of Ninth Ward. How it started, who like did Campbell come to you or why did you get involved and why did you start it?
I can't remember who introduced me to Campbell, but it had to be Rory or Matt or somebody from Mammoth. It was one of these kids. And then we just clicked like right away. And then, you know, he was explaining to me, oh, like, because you got to understand, like, at first we're just hanging out. And then he offered me to go hang out at his place and stay at his place for the winter. And then I did that. And then every night we'll be like brainstorming about like, what could Ninth Ward become? And he had like such great ideas, and I, you know, I felt it. So then, you know, because at the very beginning, it wasn't even skis; they're skateboards.
Yeah, I remember that because you had a skateboard with your Dino Star skis, and you're like, "Yeah, Ninth Ward's the shit." I was like, what's ninth word? You're like, I can't with my skateboards.
So, yeah, that was that. And then, you know, we decided why not use my credibility to start a skiing company. And we did. And that was that.
So did you leave Dinastar then?
Yep. I leave Dinastar to go and create Ninth Ward with Campbell from A to Z. Then we picked
up. So you were with Ninth Ward since day one.
Yeah.
When they started skiing.
Yep. From the day one to the very last day.
He's today, I see.
Yeah, but it's not the same person.
Okay.
It's this one kid who bought the mold and the graphics.
And how did Ninth Ward work? Because it was an interesting period, right? Because of you trying to like figure out whatever the fuck you were doing in life, whiskey and music, life.
Yep.
Like, but how was Ninth Ward experience? Was it fun for you? Like looking back on it, was like it like dope? Are you stoked on it? Do you tell people like I created a ski company called Ninth Ward? Or you're like, oh,
dude, I mean, there's nothing to complain about, except the company, the financial, and like the outcome aspects. Because other than that, like, dude, like, this was the shit, bro. Like, we had such a great time. Like, we had this crazy house with Campbell. Like, Henrik would come, Rory would come. Like, B would always be there. Like, you know, Divine and, like, all these kids. And, like, everybody was always partying and having a great time and going to go skiing, you know. And that was perfect. So, there's nothing to complain about. Ninth Ward, I had a great time. Then, like I said, you know, not every business can go as it should or how you want it to go. So then that's another story, but it is what it is, man. And I'm glad some kid just bought the mold and the graphics and still keeping it alive.
For real, yeah. One thing I always looked up to Ninth Ward is you guys made pro models for most of the skiers.
Yep.
Which was like, very rare these days, like every so company's got like pro models for this guy, but you guys really went the route of skateboarding where every athlete had his own ski. So
every athlete deserved a pair of skis, you know? Because every athlete deserved his own pair of skis instead of making it called the, I don't know, man, like the... The Mentos one and the Silver Can 3 and the this and that. Like, it was, you know, it was like Laurent had to get his pro moto. Henrik had to get his pro moto. I had mine, of course.
Silver.
And then Rory had to get his. Like, everybody deserved it, you know.
Max and Tosh Peters.
You know, to me, it was more like you said, you know, more like a skate company thing where, like, every rider is a part of a family. And it doesn't matter if he wins more contests or if he's having not as good as a career as you do type shit. You know what I mean? No, you produce it. They got you, buddy. Mister. Okay, sing on, shut up.
Yeah, I think you guys did it the right way. And a lot of ski companies should rub that off and try to make it so. Where are we going? I got something. So Iberg was like a heavy influence, obviously, on many fronts, like learning your English. So I guess like on many ends. And he told me one time when you came to Arash Master the year that you shot me in the video, you didn't know that you weren't going to be invited in the contest. And you sort of like, you guys said, well, fuck them, we'll do something that's dissing everybody at the contest. And one thing I had in my notes was the toothbrush in your do-rag. And I was wondering, what was the purpose of the toothbrush? What's the purpose?
I'll let Iberg answer that.
Dope. it cleans your shoes, man, if you got a toothbrush. And it was in his bandana that was on top of his do-rag, technically. That was a hat on top, so the toothbrushes is there in case you get some scuffs on the shoes, man.
Just pull it out. Keep them clean, dog. Gotta keep them clean.
Like an educating young Mikel.
and it's really funny because, like, my girlfriend, as far as these days goes, I'm still, like, crazy on shoes. Like, I try to lay low on those because, like, you know, little kids and whatever country making them, so we gotta keep it cool on them. So like I always like every time I come home, it doesn't matter if I've been out even just on the concrete for like an hour, not moving or anything. I come home, I clean them up, put the paper towel back in them, put them back, rock them next time. Every time I come home, clean them, put the paper towel back in them, put them back, and that way. Actually, you keep shoes nice for like a year and a half, and you gotta throw them in the trash because they don't have any soles anymore. Not because they look like shit. You know what I mean? Because you've been rocking the shit out of them. So in a way, you look cool, but at the same time, you use the, you know, you give respect to them kicks.
That's right. Take notes, people. I love it. Yeah, I do. I got the same status, man. I'm trying to keep them clean for as long as possible. I know Iberg is big on that factor, too.
On cleanliness?
I think shoes that he was on like 10 years ago. He's going to pull them out, dude.
Yo, we need to big up Riley Poor, man. Check the 2009 6.0. Oh. You ain't never seen something.
Damn.
We got the 13-year-old shoes here.
Yeah, these are 13. These are 2009, 2008, man. Big up Riley Poor.
Shit, too bad. Too bad I'm in the middle of nowhere at my mom's house because I had to came up, help with the farm and the newborns and the horses and stuff. But if we were at home, man, we could have had this conversation because I got like 25-year-old pair of shoes in my house that are fucking perfect, brand new, clean, bro. And I wore them like 20 times already.
Hell yeah. Gotta keep
people were wondering in the comment section too, like some of those iconic kits that you were wearing back in the day. This is a question that was asked like way early on, but obviously, your kits were always iconic and style, upper echelon status. And people were wondering if you still had some of those kits. Maybe you don't remember, maybe you do, but from such segments as Stereotype or Exact Science, where are these kits at?
Shit, I have no idea, bro. It's funny. It's funny because I gave many of them to my moms, and she's been rocking some of them. And like it's funny, cause like she just gave me an Oakley jacket from like 2003, like last year, which is one of those. You remember the pastel green big ass puffs with the big ass hoodies?
Yes,
that's one of, and that's the only one I have at home, bro. You remember all these crazy fucking clothing I would buy and get from my sponsor and like have thousands of them? I have no idea where all those went, bro. No clue, man.
You like, probably just traded them.
Probably trade and like you know how I am, Phil. You know how I am, Iberg. I always give shit to people because I like that, you know.
Well, it's like, nice, like not this? To have to pack stuff when you travel home when you live on the road because you know you got another box waiting when you get home.
Pretty much, that was that too. Being lazy on the packing.
Being lazy on the packing for you in the garage, man.
Oh, Stoops, just answering a common question. I don't have it, Stoops, anymore. Stephen Janish mentioned a good one, and you used to spray paint stencil your clothing like Playhouse, Osiris sign, Ganja Leaf,
Sea Crew.
How did your sponsors ever react to that shit? Or
yeah, they hated that. They hated that shit.
Oh, we loved it.
It was a big deal back then, though, too. Like especially with skis and clothes, because I remember all the sponsors used to say, especially Dinastar, they say, hey, why are you putting stickers on our product? You don't put stickers on your goggles, on your clothes or anything. So they would get mad that it was this product that was a billboard for these athletes. And so it was actually a big conversation at the beginning, like how much you could cover of your skis, because then if you took a picture, you couldn't see what the product was. Same thing with the big stencil on your clothes, right? So when Oakley outerwear just came out, if you have a big ganja leaf sprayed on your back or a big grenade or whatever the fuck it is, that's not the product anyone would buy in the fall time.
Yeah.
So that's kind of was, I remember, like an issue that you guys all had to talk with someone, but you didn't give a fuck about.
Nope. But I, you know, like if to tell you the truth, guys, like if I could like right now have my own setup. Like, I don't know if you've seen what I was skiing with this winter. Like, when I went the two first times after my back. Bro, I got black skis, black boots, black bindings, black pants, black black jacket, black goggles, black beanie, black gloves. That's it, bro. No brands. Just full on black.
Yeah, if they don't pay you, why be a billboard?
Not even that. But that's funny because you know that shot, like, with the nose press, like the butter nose kind of thing under the box? That was one of my most, yeah, that one, that shot, that was one of my most, like I'm so proud of that shot because nobody approached that back then. Like,
no, nobody not was even. It was such a big deal.
And but one thing about it, you and Stephen Thomas did that same trick the same day, right? Yeah. Is that accurate?
I think there's so, but we
big
used
up Stephen.
But we
I gotta pull it up.
We used to ride together all the time with Tommy and Zach and the Provo Bros and T, and like he was all up in Park City too. So we were doing the same tricks, of course.
Yeah, Stephen was like the clone of a little Tanner. He'd always have the same stuff on, like at that age. I think I remember long blonde hair.
True that.
Yeah, that changed the game when I first saw that. I was like, oh wait a minute, you can do that.
Yeah, I think everyone knows that clip too, man. Like, it was pretty fucked up.
Yep. That's funny, though.
I think another big thing, because we at the hour mark, that needs to be important, that's huge, is, you know, another contribution you have, whether it's whatever, it is a big deal, is the influence on Henrik, right? Whether it's the nickname that was brought up earlier, or just his general riding style. You know, I think something that's super interesting, because Henrik pulls so much from you know, and that's why this is important too. You know, Henrik is relevant, like as far as someone on skis at the fucking Olympics this year, you know, and your influence was so great on him. How did you guys' relationship even start? Like, where did you guys meet? And then how did it like kick off? Cause I mean, like you had to have been like late teens and if not in the 20s, and he was like a preteen, like 12 or 13 or something when you met.
That's exactly what it was. And the funny thing is I can't exactly, you'd have to ask him. I'm sure he'd tell you the exact second,
the words,
which location and where we met. I can't replace the exact time and like location and what year exactly, but he was like close to 12, 13. And that was funny. I think it was at the Demonium camps or something like that. The first time I saw him at a summer camp or something I was coaching. And he just showed up like a mini me, and that was crazy. Durag and grills and like.
So he already had your style before you met him. He already was like, "Yo, this is my guy, man. I got the gold teeth."
Exactly. He was all about it already.
That's wicked. So you were that, like, so when he met you, it was already you were meant to be his mentor. You were the mentor before even physically being one.
I guess so. But that's funny because you know that the clip that Phil is showing right now. This is before I actually really stopped skiing, and like that's one of my favorite edits. Cause like the style is like exactly what I was looking for then. You know that was to me, like exactly like skiing wise, exactly what I wanted to look like. So it's always a good one to watch. Like it's pleasant to watch for me. You know.
And we're watching you right now, Ski?
Yeah.
And then what is the name of this edit, Phil?
This is Amazing Boys Volume 4 Summer Edition.
Shit.
And I pulled it up also not only because, like Mick said, it's one of the most stylish of his skiing at his apex, but also here he is for the first time in my memory introduced tonight,
Yolo.
Maybe you can correct me.
And Henrik, at that time, Henrik was probably like 16, 17, something like that. Because I uploaded all these videos, but they all got taken down, and I didn't found all the source files. But somebody re-uploaded all of them because I guess they just pirated them.
Oh, so, what?
Shut up, man. Credit. You says, did you know who I think that is, Phil?
You know who it is?
I think so. Tu vois qui c'est, Fred Junot?
Ben, c'est ça?
Je pense que c'est lui, en vrai. Parce que c'est lui qui avait à chaque fois tout remis les trucs sur le net.
Ben oui, c'est clair, c'est lui qui avait tout mis tes segments, exactement.
Ben c'est ça.
Fred G, man.
Ben, Fred G, SO, SO Fred Juno, tout meilleur, m'a dit.
Nah. Yeah. I don't know what you're saying, man. Fuck you.
So pull it back and be a little selfish here. When I met Mikhail for the first time, it was at Les Deux Alpes at this rail contest. And I mean, his demeanor was so much more humble than I expected. And he was so much more genuine than I expected him to be. Not that like I thought he was an asshole, but like his segment made him look like he's like the shit. He had attitude, and it'd be scary to come up to Mikhail, and especially like me being influenced so much by him. And he came to me like so humble, and I was just basically shook, but not really because of the approach he had. So he brought me, he asked me if he could, if I wanted to join him back to Switzerland to go to Les Diablerets and live at this place,
Buddha Camp.
Name? Oh. Yeah, the Buddha Camp. And I changed my plane ticket and hopped in with Mikhail, who generously brought me over there and set me up with a place to stay. And there, for the first like time, I got to really bond with Henrik. And that's when we came up with the idea of the B&E show at Buddha Camp, because through Mikhail's bringing me over there. So thank you so much, Mikhail, responsible for
B&E
friendship and life.
Best show never in the world. Knew that you one guys either, man. The flowers, the game, we too. Keep throwing them on you.
Yep.
So Phil, that was 2008. So you were 2000. Josh asked, I think 2008. Yeah. So you were 18.
Yeah, 18. That's the answer. Yeah.
Oh, Henrik's there, man. Should we get him on the live and just have him have like the official interaction? Got to answer, Henrik. We want to know the exact story.
Yeah, exactly. Come on, Dolo. Don't be shy. Let us see if you got
the Mikhail's here, man. He created the B&E.
Shit. I didn't even know that, but that's crazy. But yo, Phil, that's funny that you mentioned that. I totally forgot, like, my head, like, I totally forgot about that rail contest in Les Deux Alpes. But, yo, that was lit, bro. That was the first time we ever met. That was dope, though.
And he got the do-rag on. But is he wearing grills?
But are you at a restaurant right now? We're buzzing you while you're eating. Damn. Bon appétit, mon frère.
Ça va?
Ça va et toi?
Yeah. Well, nice work on answering, man. We got a party, man. Minnesota, Quebec, Switzerland.
Got done with a spot in Finland.
Where are you right now, Henrik?
Nope.
He's in Finland.
Oh man!
Still, yo, you're still in Finland? How long you been there, bro?
We've been there for a month, and we just extended for another extra week.
So it's like that good?
It's amazing. Yeah.
Finland.
Just do an urban?
Yeah.
All right. Cool. Man. That's dope.
Yeah, so Henrik, we got him on the live because we're giving Mikhail his flowers, telling him how dope he is. We just found out that he helped create the B&E show, but we're calling you for your interpretation of the first time meeting Mikhail, because we always thought you got gold grills style after Mikhail, but you got it before you even met him. So do you remember the first time you met him?
Yeah, the first time we really kicked it was at in Zurich at the freestyle.ch.
Oh, right. That was before the Monium. You're right. That was even before that.
Yeah. And that was like the first time I got to speak to him. But I had seen him before already in Aura. He came to Red Bull Big Air in 2000.
Wait, I think I got that picture. And then he came back in
2001, and then I saw him at US Open. First time I went there in 2005, the year after he did back to back when he wore all black suit in the big air, number one, dropping in the big air. It was
so what wicked. Here's the question. What made Mikkel so awesome for you as a little kid? It's like growing up and wanting to be a skier, like why was Mikkel the dope shit that you wanted to emulate with the teeth and style and everything?
The style. Of course. You guys been talking about it, but it stood out a lot. It was, yeah. Like same as what Mikkel was saying about Seth Morrison, it was like something extra, something that you were like, oof, I wanna be like as ill as this dude. And before that I was like always like watching like skateboarding, and same as Mikkel was saying too, I was like alpine racing, so I knew about skiing and knew about skateboarding, and then got introduced to this sport that was like a mix between skateboard and skiing, I guess. And then just like with his attitude, his like confidence, style, everything, that was like something extra.
Yeah, it had to be crazy for you too as a Swede, because freestyle skiing was pretty GQ and aura.
Yes, sir. And then, not quite yet at that time, but.
No?
No, it was like super Mikkel influenced.
Early 2000s, the women had like Lindbergh?
Yeah, but Yoon had like red dreads.
And okay, like, yeah. 2000, 2001. Yeah, even Yoon was rubbing his hair. Like from 2000. Yeah. You're right, man. Tanner rubbed his head. Yoon rubbed. Dude, they all rubbed their head because of you, Mikkel. Here's another thing you brought. Henrik, yeah, well. Man, they owe their style in 2001 to you.
Yeah, man, it is what it is.
But I'm gonna let you guys keep going. I'm gonna eat this dinner.
Yeah, yeah, go get your so food, brother.
Enjoy it.
To you guys speak.
Love you, dog.
Get your dinner.
Love you guys so much. Thank you.
Thanks for peace. Tuning in.
Yes, T. Hollis. Give thanks, Henrik. Man, Henrik just brought like hundreds of people. He's big
time. I know, right? The followers just went from 50 to like 600 some shit. So that's funny because he's talking about Zurich, and now we remember. You ever seen that picture of me with that huge I Am Ghetto shirt that we made with Troy and gloves? That was the same day that I met him, and I had that one piece suit camouflage that you offered to me, Iberg.
Yes, another style check, Steve's check.
And the hat that goes with it, and that hat I still have, though. I still have in my house. That hat is like 25 years old. Anyway, well, that's the day I met him. I
put shells in it when I play baseball and pitched in practice.
And that's crazy because when I met Henrik the very first time, it was this little kid. And now I remember at the Zurich, I was wearing that one-piece suit with the camel thing right after the contest. And he came and he was like, yo, Mikkel, can I take a picture with you? And I had my full grills on. And he had his full grills on, and I was like, who the fuck is this kid? And then I have that picture.
Is this the one where he's like tilted hat like this?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I have that picture somewhere in my phone. I got to send it to you. You're going to trip, bro.
No, I know. I got it perfectly visualized. Yeah, that shirt's wicked. What the fuck? So you know where we got it from? The guy in Seawalk, A Way of Life, a documentary on Crip Walking that I showed you when you were learning English. He had the shirt that said, I am ghetto, and you were so stoked on it. You got a marker, took your shirt inside out, and you're like, I want a shirt like the guy from the Crip Walk documentary. Oh, ghetto. Great memory.
Awesome, dog.
Man, we got to keep digging here. I mean, rubbing head was a huge one. I mean, who would you and Ken be if they didn't rub their heads?
I'm going to be gone for 1 minute. I got to take a leak.
Oh, man. I've been holding back. You guys,
that's cool. Yeah, we gotta take time to chime in with the audience here. What up, Charlie Johansson? Hope I'm making your day by saying your name. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. If y'all just tuning in, we're with Mikkel Dishnow and Erik Iberg, legendary people within the sport of free skiing and in life in general. Y'all just missed the GOAT, Henrik Arlo, telling us how he met Mikkel, because Mikkel basically is one of the main influence for Henrik and myself, our style.
And Mikhail
gave Henrik Arlo and Iberg. Henrik Arlo's Idolo comes from the man here that we got on, Mikhail Dishno, who himself is known by what AKAs, Iberg?
I bet.
So many. I tell the story of a boat and a car from Dubsky yet. Boat and a car. Oh, yeah. Dubsky, boat and car. Pull up the segment, Phil. Actually, Dubsky is great stories, man. This whole thing with you and Shoya, it was one of the funnest skits ever to shoot. I was thinking about the scene. So originally, for anyone that's seen this Dubsky and loves Mikhail like I do, Mikhail and Shoya were pimps. So everything about this movie.
Oh, wait. One sec, Iberg, because there was a funny comment. Oh, I can't. How do I slide down the comment? Somebody was asking about my chin tattoo, and it was like, is that because you're like old, have no hair, or what? That does some funny ass comment. Anyway, yeah, go on.
Fred LaRue on this bitch too, man. We'll get it. Fuck.
Shout out Fred LaRue at Ben's Vision.
Oh, Buffon. Yeah, there's my girlfriend started talking shit on that. So I'm having fun. Let's talk
on Fred. Don't talk shit on Fred. Man, he's all ripped now. So Dubsky, for people that have seen it. So originally, the whole point of this movie was to create alter egos of skiers, because I was like, wow, people create opinions of my friends that have never met them. So I'm like, I'll give them some opinions to create. That's why Rory killed people and Tanner looked like he was in a rap video and CR was Top Gun. So Mikhail and Shoya Okazaki, big up a little Shoya out in Japan. I created them as pimps. And like it was just fun. Like we were out in Lake Tahoe. The hustle was real. We're all sleeping on couches. Found this guy that had a mogul skier friend, Tony Basile. Found a guy at breakfast that had a dope car. He's like, I found a dope car for you. Booyah, we found a car in the morning. And then the car guy's like, I know a guy with a boat. And then that was awesome. Then Dash Long was like, yo, my girlfriend's pretty hot. We can have him as the hose. And so then we got Dash Long's girlfriend and her friends to be the hose in the scene. And Dash was the one that was paying her for the services that gave Henrik or Mikhail the money. Best part about this shit, we shot it all in one fucking day with all the different rigs, 16 millimeter. Then we had to shoot the intro and the whole scene of the movie that night. I was the original DJ, not Raps. And so we shot did everything. And so Mikhail was so fucking wasted because he really had booze in his cup all day. Like he filled that thing all day with hypnotic Hennessy.
We got Pimp cup.
And Shoya, like he's passed out on the couch. Like, but Mikhail's so drunk during the scene where he's in the studio where he's yelling at Shane. And we have this video, man. Shane brings it up every time. Yeah, I'm gonna fucking kill you, Shane. Fuck you, Iberg. He was so mad at us and so blackout drunk. It was crazy. So we had to remake the whole movie because of that. That was fun. And then, I don't know, man. It was just all epic. And then the scene that we didn't have in the movie, because when you guys were in the studio, we had this one scene where, like, some girls started, like, they were rubbing your shoulders. And then, like, you got baking powder from one girl that pulled out between her boobs, and then you slapped another girl in her face. And we never got to put that in there because you were a pimp. So we had all this pimp shit going down. It was fucking awesome.
So, and reference from, I assume, like from How High and whatnot, if you guys remember the scene of him putting some baby powder on his hand and slapping the hose.
Yeah.
The baby powder. This is all pimp shit. Does anything I could think of, like those suits, we went down to the Reno Goodwill and like found these outfits. Like every single thing we did, like Shoya was in town for like 3 days from Japan. Like we had to get locations, we had to do everything. Like it was a like 3 days no sleep of awesomeness and alcohol and just ganja.
Yeah,
Shoya didn't even know it was happening.
Shit. Oh, look, Phil, it's funny though, because I was looking for a picture with Henrik. I just ended up finding this.
Yes, sir. That was one of the greatest moments in the game for me, man. Getting acknowledged by the man after a fucking Cork 180.
Yeah, that's the mic.
And yeah, you're like also Switzerland lineage, also like everywhere. Can't generalize, but Switzerland's got some of the nicest style pool in the game. Like, I'm thinking about you first and foremost, Laurent Demartin, Easy Panda,
Nico Kai Pena, Mahler.
Kai Mahler. Kai,
motherfucker. Same with that Sammy Ortlieb.
He's Ortlieb.
Got his style.
He's got his own lane, but God damn, Switzerland's got that heat, man. You guys, it's a beautiful country. I don't know where I'm going with that, but shout out Switzerland.
Big up Swiss fondue.
Yeah, so
much,
man.
So much better than French fondue.
Shit, you know the vibes.
I do.
Oh, Phil just fell off.
Chill out.
I'm out.
Yo, Snoop Kel douche dog, represent.
With the ladies.
So
it was Quick Brother's girlfriend, too. I can't read any more comments, so if anyone has comments, they got Phil and Mikael have to see them.
I missed most of them. Did you get
that? Yeah, me too.
My shit's frozen. I'm stuck on Ross Jacob saying, still rubbing my head because of Mick.
Oh, here we got some from He's it's too long to write, but I remember a lot of times when Henrik would go on into a persona to impersonate Mick D way before meeting him. Tinfoil grills and all that, reenacting whole segments. So Henrik was already playing the chameleon role, and which is my two cent on Henrik, why he's the greatest, is because he used Darwin's fucking theory of evolution. He used a bit of everything to become the greatest. So he picked some of me. He used the best people, took a bit of the best here, a bit of the best there, culminated it into an ultimate being, which made a super extraterrestrial Dolo. That's my pitch.
Oh, we lost the mic, but I agree. Everything's freezing, dropping out. So I was going crazy.
But good stuff. We did it, man. We got the. We could go on for hours and days, but I think we're going to keep it at this and let Mikael unfreeze so we can give him his final roses.
Oh, he's going to call back, hopefully.
Oh, yeah, he will.
Roses, daisies. What's a bummer, man. My stuff all froze. At least it always froze at 100 watchers. We got 100. Douche dog.
I'm back, bitches.
I'm back, bitches.
Nah, yeah. It's just I actually didn't miss any parts of you talking about like how Henrik picked like everything. It's just I don't know, like my phone kind of bugged out, but I was still hearing you, so that's why I quickly sent a request.
That's what happened to me before.
No worries. Yeah, man.
Lolo is French, but yeah, Mikael, I was just wrapping things up here.
I know, I heard it too.
Have a good evening with your moms, and wanted to give you praises and thanks for jumping on with us, and obviously thanks for what you've done for skiing in general and for myself. The influence you set me on a path that I don't think I would have taken without both of you guys here present. So from music influence to style influences to choices in life, big up yourselves, both of you. Amen. And I hope we can connect in the reality soon enough.
Well, thanks. That's go straight to the heart. You know, tu sais comment, frère. Je te kiffe trop. Your skin is just fucking insane. I'm having so much fucking good times watching your videos every time there's some new shit coming out, bro. Like, even the small IG edits and shit like that. Like, bro, like, you know me, I don't watch much of it except, like, Isaac, you, Henrik, Laurent, and, like, some other kids that I like. Regarding the style, and man, thank you so much for keeping that shit alive, you know. And thanks to Heiberg for everything, man. Fucking, yeah. He's the real legend.
You guys,
real legendary one in this conversation is him, bro.
Yeah, for real. He's the one instigating us getting together and making it happen. The
Billy, thanks for letting me talk about skiing. Still, I love this shit.
And has been doing that since the last two decades, man. That's crazy.
Yeah, no, I don't even do this other than Wednesdays. So yeah, thanks, Mikael, man. Big up yourself on everything you did. I'm stoked you're still in the world here. breathing.
Yes, Reg says Iberg's a legend. He knows the vibes. Iberg's the real legend. But yeah, thanks to you guys, and thanks for whoever was following and took the time to listen to all of our lovely blue. But yeah, hopefully, like you said, Phil, hopefully we get to get together like sooner than later, man. It's been a minute.
Facts.
Are you guys going to be, well, Iberg, I know you're not going to, but are you going to be in Annecy?
Phil? What do you mean? Rap just said invited me. I think I'm a judge or something.
What?
I'm coming to Europe. Hooray.
Finally. Hell yeah, bro.
Been a decade.
Wicked. That might be it. Yeah. Hopefully. Love you, dudes. Thanks for being on.
Love you guys.
Love you too, my brother.
Happy Wednesday, everybody.
Yeah. See you next Wednesday.
Safe, guys. Have a good one. Stay safe out
there. You too, brother.
Peace.
Big love. One.